This is an international podcast transmission. Is anyone out there? If you're listening, you've reached the No Fixed Agenda podcast.
I'm taking this train to the promised land. Won't you give it up? You understand. We'll take one foot forward. Don't look back.
This is the first time I've ever done anything like this, so I'm...
Oh, it's very casual. There's going to be a lot of laughter. There may be some tears. I don't know. I don't know who would cry, you or Jeff first. I don't know. It might be me, because I'm easy to cry for sure, man. I am an emotional creature, and I thrive off of deep conversation.
See how I got your little tiki right there?
Yeah, I see that, dude. Oh, yeah. See? I got these three little tikis. I took my first vacation in 4 years.
Oh, my land.
And I was in a gift shop in Mexico, and they had these tikis. And then there's four of us that work out together. And the tikis were all stacked up against each other. And there was like a short one, a medium-sized one, and a really tall one. And ironically, the guys that we work out with, short, medium. So I bought all three of them, right? And
they're like, works out great.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. I was like, this is perfect. Like, they're going to be like, what does this symbolize? And so this rock is actually a rock that the Mayans used to for cultivating weapons. And that was their one trading thing that they used in the Mayan culture in their culture.
Where in Mexico did you?
I went to Tulum.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Tulum. It was muggy, hot, but
you must have been there other than January and February. You were there in the
I just came back. Was it a week ago?
It was
disgusting, but it was also very beautiful. And I think I slept like 24 hours in the first 48.
Really?
Yeah.
We like Mexico. We have gone to Mexico probably 18 or 20 times.
What parts?
Well, different parts. We've been clear down to Huatulco, clear down south. We've been at Ixtapa. It's a favorite place.
Yeah.
We're going to Puerto Vallarta here in February. And all West Coast places, of course.
Okay.
Along all the vacation traps.
Down Baja. And
yeah. I think when we go there this year, it'll be the fourth time maybe we've been to Puerto Vallarta over the years.
Can't get this guy to come to Mexico with me.
I'm not really a Mexico guy. Yeah. I've been Cancun.
That's not Mexico, that's bro. That's not
Mexico.
That is not. Look.
I've been to Tijuana and Rosarito.
That.
Ensenada.
Mate, you're getting warmer.
But
you're getting warmer.
I actually have never been to Cabo.
You're not missing anything.
Not really interested.
You're not missing anything.
And
I would never take you there.
So, yeah, I have no interest in going to Mexico at all.
What I'm going to pick on you today, but go ahead.
That's fine.
What scares you about Mexico?
Nothing scares me about Mexico. I just would rather go to, I hate to say this, I'd rather go to first world countries.
God, I love it. You have not been to Mexico recently then.
You know I'm bougie, so it's...
Oh, dude. Some of these places, man, they are bougie. Tulum? Bougie.
Yeah, I know.
Bougie, bruh. And it was beautiful. But I think you would truly enjoy going to Mexico City.
I would like to see
and
Mexico City.
I think you would truly enjoy going to Guadalajara.
Maybe.
No, you would. And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Because there's some really bougie places that are not that expensive and they're beautiful. And you, like me, like history.
Yes.
And there's a shit ton of it.
That's true.
And there's so much history, so much culture. And it's not that bad. It's really, Mexico City felt like Chicago, bro.
I guess I've got so many other places that I would like to go overseas before I start going to places that are connected to the U.S. I still haven't been to Canada either.
Toronto, baby.
I haven't been to Canada. I would love to go to Vancouver. I'd love to go to Toronto.
Likes to be warm, so he won't go to Toronto. He can go to Chicago and be freezing his butt off anyways.
Yeah. Speaking of which.
Enough about you and me, all right?
Special guest today. My dad is in studio with us. Baby. And him and my mom are here visiting for the week. And then I brought this up to your attention. Ooh. And you were like, let's get him on. I got so many questions.
I want to learn about baby Jeff.
So without further ado, welcome to the podcast, Dave Stoner.
Yeah. If we had like one of those little buds. Yeah, dude. Dave, man, how you been, man? What's going on? How you liking Southern Cal?
Been excellent. Life is good, and Southern Cal is even better, you know. We love coming out here. We don't come out here enough, but
you said you were-
we love coming here, and it's a great place to come. You know, one thing out here, the weather's always perfect all the time. I watched the weather guy on TV the other day, and I thought, you know, he must be somebody that just started because he can't screw up the weather out here. Well, you're always going to be the same. At home, the guy keeps his job and he's only 50% correct. You
know? Facts. Sunny and warm, 70 and sunny all day long. Oh, there's a marine layer. That's about it. That's the extent of our weather here.
Yeah. It's a tough job, but not so tough.
Yeah. No offense, so, Heather Lake.
No offense to our forecaster friends.
Yeah.
So we were talking about it earlier. It's been about 3 years since they've been here, but they've consistently come here enough where they've been able to experience a lot of San Diego. They've, you know, done a lot of the historical tours and now they're just living it up on the beach life up in Carlsbad with us. You know, it's
the beach life. Oh, it's rough. Rough. Because you guys are still living in the Midwest, right?
Yes. And we've always lived in the Midwest, both my wife and myself. I was born in near Los Angeles. But when I was like 5 years old, my dad got transferred to Peoria, Illinois, of all places. And so I grew up in the Peoria area all the time. And when I got out of school, I went to Illinois. And when I got out of school, I'd have gone anywhere in the country. But so happened that about 20 miles away from where I grew up, they were looking for a canning company, vegetable processing operation.
The infamous canning company.
Looking for a management trainee. Oh. And so I went there and spent 17 years there. And then I spent I spent 29 years there.
I was going to say, come on now.
And then 10 years in the distilling business, in a distillery south of Peoria in Pekin. So I've been in the agri-processing business my whole career.
Wow.
And my wife is from the Midwest also and from the Peoria area. And we've stayed there and probably will be till the end.
Till the end. Hopefully not for a much longer time. What part of LA were you born in?
Inglewood
in the house. Yeah. Inglewood ain't what it used to be though.
Well, I know.
Have you been lately?
About 8 or 9 years ago, I had occasion to, I do some volunteer work with the Red Cross, disaster relief work.
Yeah.
And we were doing some work out in the Los Angeles area and I had occasion to go through Inglewood. I said, oh man, I can't believe my parents lived here, but it was
back then. It ain't the same Inglewood. It's not the same Inglewood.
Where'd you grow up at? You grew up.
Born in LA too, but I was,
but not in that side though.
No, I was in, East LA.
Yeah.
And so I was born in General Hospital. My mom worked in General Hospital. And so
you were born on a TV show?
I was born on a TV show. Absolutely. I got my start. You did not know this. I got my start early, buddy.
Yeah, I guess.
My mom was nurse A. No. But my mom was a registered nurse early on, and she had us there, and we we lived in Highland Park, and we moved down here when I was like 8. So we were fleeing a pretty crappy part, but I go back there now and I'm like, I am so glad I live here in Southern California, in San Diego.
So you've always been in California
then? 100%. Yeah. I mean, I used to go down to Mexico for the summers and a couple times, like long stays, like 6 months. But so I usually either in Baja California on the west side, just like all the places that you like to go visit that I can't get Jeff to go do, and or in San Diego. Yeah, I am super spoiled. Every time I travel, I can't wait to get home.
Well, you know, that's a truism, and with me too. I miss my house, and I miss my dog.
The dog love. That's where Jeff gets it from.
You can start to see about the 4 days in on his trips, you can kind of start to see he's starting to talk about home a little bit more, starting to talk about their dog a little bit more. Like, oh, well, I got this to do. I got this to do at home. And so I can kind of see it when they're out here visiting. Yeah. And that's always been the case. And Ben, to that credit though, they live on 9 acres of land, 3 acres is house, and it's super quiet, you know? So the serenity of that, right, is kind of what.
Yeah, we're country people. We live near Peoria, Illinois, about 20 miles north of Peoria, Illinois. And Peoria is a fair-sized community, a couple 100,000 people in that area. But we live north of there, out in the country area. And we like to think that we've got all the best things about living in the country. You know, neighbors aren't real close, and there's it's just a great area, but we're close enough to Peoria. You can be to the Super Walmart or the local stores in 20 minutes. And so we just love where we are. We're agricultural people, I guess, at heart.
How old are you?
I'm 77.
77 years old.
Yeah.
And you spent your whole life in Illinois for the most part, other than the first
five years. We moved there when I was 5 years old.
And so... Talk to me about what it was like growing in the Midwest as a child.
You know, it was great. You know, it was, we lived in those days, being young, we lived in Peoria, and you could get on your bicycle when you were old enough to learn how to ride a bike. Yeah. And you could ride the bike all over town. Like, you're crazy, you know? And we did that. And sometimes there was no crime, nothing to be in your way, you know, and you could take your bike to go to the swimming pool or go just wherever you wanted to go. And sometimes for an extra thrill, we go and get on the city bus. And
you can't make this thing go. I'm getting, go ahead.
We go up, and I think you'd paid a nickel or something like that. And we'd get on the bus just to see where it went, you know, and it'd take us like downtown Peoria, you know, and we'd see different places there. We'd go to the West End, the South End, one thing or another, just to kind of see how it was. And then you ride the bus back up near home, get off the bus.
Wow. Just to get crazy, you get off
the bus.
That's
what we do in the Midwest.
This is what we do. Like, you want to get crazy? Jump on a public bus, buddy. It'll take you places you've never seen.
But no, it was a great life. Of course, back in those days, things were different. You know, you had the YMCA. You went to the YMCA all the time and took your swimming lessons, and you did all the activities there and so forth. You went to day camps in the summertime, Boy Scout camps, did weekend Boy Scout camps. You used to do those quite a bit. It was just almost an ideal childhood. Sometimes these days when I look around, I see these kids, they don't seem to have time for any of that stuff because they're all playing summer sports or one thing or another, or playing too much on their games. I really think that, you know, it was kind of an ideal situation, but I guess I don't know any different than that because that's what I experienced.
Simple life, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like a very simple life. And then when did you meet your wife growing up?
Actually, I met my wife after college. I went to the University of Illinois.
Okay.
And, you know, when you're 18 years old, you don't know really what you want to do. You know, I thought I wanted to be an electrical engineer because I'd spent a lot of time as a grade school kid and a high school kid tearing apart TVs and radios and messing with that kind of stuff. And yeah. I thought I wanted to be an electrical engineer until I went down to Champaign, and I did that for, a semester and a half, maybe two semesters. And I said, you know what? I don't want to be an engineer, an electrical engineer. I kind of like agriculture. So I transferred into the ag curriculum down there and got a degree in agribusiness.
Okay.
And that's how I got into the food business, the processing world. That's what I got. Anyway, as I got out of school, you know, I moved back up around the Peoria area. And, you spend too much time probably frequenting the establishments, the bars and stuff. And I met my wife, of all places, in a bar.
Hey, I met my wife in a bar too, baby. It's been 25 years.
I believe the story goes, my dad was with another woman. With two other women.
Two other women.
women. Baby. And my mom ended up going home with him or something along those lines, but it ended up being that she stole him away from two other women. That's how it works.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, those were the days, man.
You get in trouble, man.
So we did. We met in the, I think I was headed to the restroom, and I left these two gals sitting in the bar, headed to the restroom, and she stopped me, you know, and started talking to me, and was trying to impress me, I think. She told me she went to Penn State.
Oh, I remember this part of the story, too.
She was from Pennsylvania. She had grown up in Pennsylvania and had moved to the Peoria area. But at any rate, she thought she'd impress me, I guess, and said she was from Penn State. Well, make a long story short, I ask her out on a date, you know, the next day or so. And I don't know that I really ever went out with anybody else since then, you know.
Wow.
So, and we've been married 51 and a half years now. Yeah. So it's worked out good. She's been a great wife and a great person. She's, I don't know how I'd get along without her, you know. It's
yeah.
A beautiful
thing. Yeah. I always ask people that have been married longer than I have two questions. What's the secret to staying married?
Well, I think the secret is just respecting one another and working hard and saying yes.
She's always right. Yeah. But you point out something that a lot of people that are married young that don't realize that it's a lot of hard work.
Yeah.
This is wrapped in a hard work.
Well, you know, I think it makes your whole life. You have to have a happy life that you're excited about having. And that means, like, not only you're excited about your wife, you're excited about your family, you're excited about your job, you're excited about your social connections, you know? And these days, sometimes you look around and people just, they don't have a lot of those things in a lot of cases. And I think once you're in the groove where things are good, you know, I used to be able to wake up in the morning and leap out of bed and be excited about going to work. Mm. And so many times you talk to people who work a place for 30 years and they hate every minute of it, you know?
Yeah.
But that carries over into your married life, into your social life. Is, I think happiness is something that's hard to come by for some people these days.
Yeah. Well, I don't think they know. I think a lot of times it's like they don't understand how to define it in a lot of ways. What is happiness? And it's like, I coach a lot of people and it's like, what's the perfect body for you all? I don't know. It's like whatever I saw on the internet or something. I think, would you attribute that you understand your happiness because you lived that simple country life?
Well, I think that's got a lot to do with it. But, you know, on the other hand, I can't say that I've really done anything different, you know? So it's been the only thing I've done. But yeah, I guess since everything's turned out so good, yeah, it's probably a part of it.
Yeah.
And we, you know, we still like that. And we still have the same, you know, in a lot of cases, we have the same friends, the same circle of friends that we had 50 years ago. And wow. Some of those people you're still in touch with as you go along.
That's social goals right there. The fact that you can have friends that have been around that long.
Yeah.
Right. I think that says a lot about the people you keep in contact with right there. That core group of individuals, like we've talked about, core five or six people, right?
That you're always around.
Yeah.
That's kind of where you get it from.
He's a pretty good friend is what I'm saying. It's like, it's really hard to find, I guess people that are like-minded, but more importantly, that are loyal, that are like accepting of you no matter what, right? No matter what your background is. And I think I got that in Jeff for sure. You did a good job with this guy.
Yeah.
So you got married 51 and a half years ago, right?
Gotta throw the half in.
I forgot the half. Met the wife at the bar, which I think there's something too, because didn't you meet your wife at a bar?
For the purpose of this story, we'll say yes.
It was close.
We met through mutual friend that she went to college with and I lived next to in Pacific Beach. We frequented bars together. And she pretty much approached me, carried on with the, got everything started.
She'll tell you differently, but
your wife approached you. His wife approached him.
Hey, the stoners are wanted men.
There you
go. I
met my wife at a bar, but I had to approach her. And then I used her to get into the bar for free.
There's a trick for that.
There's a trick. So you met your wife 51 and a half years ago. When did you guys start building a family?
Jeff was our first. We met in like 72 or 73. Got married in 74. Jeff comes along in 76.
Yeah.
Holy smokes.
It was quick. Yep. And I've been the highlight of their life the rest of the way.
Yeah. And then how many kids did you, I know Jeff.
Jeff's got a brother.
A brother, yep. Right?
We had just had two.
Just two. And then how far apart are the brothers?
Three years.
Yep. And that was it, right?
So. Yeah. It's one of those things, as you go along, you go down the road and you think, oh man, I wish we'd had one more. But by then it's too late,
Yeah, did you want a girl? Did you want a girl to offset, or were you happy with the two boys?
We were both happy with the two boys, but I think, and Trudy would always say, "Oh, I don't want a girl now. I know how to deal with boys. I don't want a girl now."
Yeah, you're lucky. Yeah, when you have girls. Nothing against my two daughters. All right, nothing against them. I love you, Milena. I love you, Amanda. Right.
Omar's got six kids and one grandson.
Yeah.
Oh. By the way. Yeah.
And I'm happy, kind
of. I'm happy now, but yeah.
Your kids are spread out from like 20 down.
Well, there's a story. You ever watching the show The Brady Bunch?
Uh-huh.
No, I am The Brady Bunch.
Oh, okay.
The modern day Brady Bunch.
Okay.
Right? I met my wife at a bar, and she had three kids and was divorced and was not looking to remarry. I was recently divorced, and had three kids and was not looking to get married.
Ah.
And so we met happenstance. I, like you, was at another bar getting ready to go home with two girls. Okay.
Right. So your story goes.
Yeah. That's my story goes, right? And so, no, it's true. I will pull up the tapes, right? But no, there was my friends. We went out New Year's Eve. And we went out and I was in total party mode. I was totally traumatized from my first marriage. And we went to New Year's Eve and my buddy's like, "Hey, Dan, we're going to go one bar." And we said, "Great." And then I immediately started talking to some girl and I'm like, "Hey, man, I'm getting out of here, dude." You know, it's before New Year's. It's not even New Year's Eve yet. It's not midnight. And I'm like, "You guys are slow, man." I'm like, "Come on, man, dude." I was like, "Fine." So then I ditched that girl. And then I go back to the bar. I was dancing, went to sit at the bar again. And then two girls approached me. They said, "Have you ever been with two girls?" And I said, "No, but I'm willing to give it the old college try, right?" Looked over at my buddies. It's still not midnight, man. You can't leave us. I go, "It's like 30 minutes before midnight, dude. I am out of here," right? And they're like, "No, come on, man. Come on. We still got to go to the other bar." And I'm like, "Dude, never in my life had the ever opportunity." And the opportunity has never arose again, okay? And so I walked away from that, which was very rare for me. And this is why I say me and my wife were supposed to meet. We left that bar to go to some other bar that were serving pozole. You know what pozole is? No, it's like a soup that's made out of pork or beef, and it has like hominy, like cornmeal in it and stuff like that, right? Okay. It's very good. It's a traditional Mexican dish that they usually serve around New Year's. And so we're like, we're going to go have pozole. Come on, we got to go to this other bar. And it was closer to the border. So like mad. I'm like, you guys are lame. Yeah, da, 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 da. And as soon as we parked the car, we parked into this place. The place was called Over the Border. And I get out of the truck and it was four of us. The other three are barely stumbling out of the truck. I pop out of the truck and I see this blonde girl with a big old buddy. And I was like, ooh. And I go, hey, how's it in there? And she's like, oh, and I'm talking to her in Spanish. And she's like, it's fine. It's good. And I go, is it still? Yeah, the environment's really good. And I started just, what's your name? And then I started like, we walked in together and there was like a $50 cover charge or something like that. And I was like, because it's New Year's. And I was like, and so she walked up to the security, comes up, looks at her, looks at me, and he passes me through. Ah. My other buddies are paying $50 to get in. And I'm like, yeah, I told you guys are too slow, right? So we started talking, and immediately I took her out to dance, and we danced all the way through the night to the point where the music stopped playing and we were still dancing. And I said, girl, somebody, we just hit it off. I made a date with her. I said, hey, I'll call you. And I purposely waited 7 days to call her back. And she was like, I thought for sure you weren't going to call me. And then she tells a story now. Called her back 7 days later. And she's like, and we both had the same idea. I dressed down tremendously for our date because I wasn't trying to get like serious. And she purposely dressed down and not super sexy because she didn't want to be in a relationship. We ended up hitting it off. We had on that date. The following weekend, we were going to set another date for 2 weeks because she had something to do. But we ran into we were at a club again after we had our date and we ran into each other. And I looked at her and she looked at me. She goes, what are you doing here? She goes, I'm on a date with some other dude, right? And she goes, what are you doing here? I'm on a date with some other girl.
Oh, and so, mercy.
And so we were like, we got together. We ended up going out again. And then the rest is history. We ended up stopped dating other people and we were just hanging around. But for 5 years, we neither one of us wanted to get married.
Well, and, that's
and so when the 7 years came around, we finally got married.
Well, that's good. Yeah. When everything worked out great. That's good.
We got married on our lunch breaks.
Oh.
At the courthouse. Yeah. And went back to work after we were married. And that was 24 years ago.
Oh.
Yeah. So I can relate to your story of meeting your wife at a bar and your wife.
Yeah. And she's been great. And, you know, when you talk about getting married, I told her, I said, you know, I'm in the agricultural business. I can't do anything in the spring and the summer and the fall. There's too much work. So if we're going to get married, we need to get married in February. And so, you know, like our whole life revolved around the wintertime. We got married in February. Our kids came early in the year. We have at our house, everything came to the wintertime. That was when you did things when I wasn't working.
So what was it like raising a young Jeff?
Here you know, go. It was...
I was an angel. I was an angel.
Pretend he's not here, okay? Look at
well, you know, he was a good kid and didn't give me a lot of trouble. One of the things in respect to Trudy, because I was working so much and because I worked so many hours, you know, she probably did more to raise Jeff and Scott than I did. You know, I would take off work, come home, and if they were going to a ball game or something, I'd maybe go to a ball game, then I'd go back to work. You know, but it was he was a good kid, and somehow along the line came up with good attitudes, a good work ethic, and good head on his shoulders. And it was wasn't a real tough task raising kids. But again, in respect to Trudy, I didn't probably do my part either. You know, I didn't quite do as much as I could have. But
I was an angel. I told you that.
I think I should. I got to meet Trudy, bro. Like, well,
she'll probably tell you a lot of different stories, but I don't think so. I think I would to everything though, growing up in a small town, it's harder to find things to get in trouble with.
Well, what does trouble look like in a small town?
I will tell you there's,
because I mean, I know what trouble looks like in a big city with a bunch.
So there's not really, growing up in a town of 1400 people.
Yeah.
Everybody knows your business.
Facts.
So it's really tough to have those opportunities where you go out and go to a party or you're going out with somebody on a date or whatever it is. Everybody in town knows what's going on, and that's the problem. And I think when I got into high school, you know, there's a little bit more you can get away from. I spent a lot of time in Peoria with my friends in Peoria, and I was lucky enough that a lot of the people I hung out with in Peoria were like right on the edge. So they went to small schools still in Peoria. So there's some thing like there's probably a few things that they don't know. And I'm happy to tell you right now. So remember I had that scooter?
Yeah.
That black little scooter.
Was it an electric scooter?
No, you're like a moped.
No, it was
motorized moped.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
right?
Today's version of an e-bike.
I guess. I don't know. It's just a moped. Like
it wasn't electric or anything like that.
It was all gas.
So I snuck out of the house a few times on that thing to go meet a girlfriend. I don't think you guys ever knew that.
Sorry.
Yeah, that was a little tricky because the way the house was set up, so you kind of had to maneuver around. Like, luckily, their room was on the very far end of the house, and my brother and I had rooms right up on top of the stairs. So you got, at that point in time, they didn't have any security cameras. The problem was, is because the only thing that I could drive was that goddamn moped. Cause I don't even know if I was 16 yet. I must've been 15, I guess. Anyway, I had to go into the garage. You couldn't open the garage door up. Right. So I had to open up the actual door. You have to walk. I had to walk the moped, and the way their house goes, it's the road winds around the front of their house. So I actually had to walk. I had to walk the moped all the way, maybe a quarter mile till I got way past the house downhill. So you couldn't hear it turn on. And cause they had that one of those motors, really loud motors. So, and there was a couple of times that I did the same thing when coming back, and we only lived a mile from outside of town.
Okay.
So it was not that long of a distance. So it's same thing. You come home, you gotta turn the motor off and walk it up. And it's a little bit of an uphill battle. So I did
like a middle of the night, dude. Are we talking like 1 a.m, 2 a.m? What are we talking? Yeah. I mean, if you're going to tell the story, then you're going to,
I think it must've been around 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. I think
I didn't know about that. See?
Yeah. That happened twice. Same girlfriend happened twice, but
obviously it didn't work out.
Obviously it definitely wasn't that kind of relationship.
29 years at the canning factory. What was the name of the canning factory?
Well, it had various names as we went along. When I first went there, it was a privately held company, and it went by the name Joan of Arc.
Okay.
Named after the gal in France. And we had, at that point in time, we had four different facilities, one there in Princeville, Illinois, and two in Louisiana, and one over in Eastern Illinois, at Hoopston, Illinois. Okay. And so I went there, and it was a fairly small company, family oriented and so forth. But it was great. I got the experience. Here I have a kid just out of college. I get to kind of experience how the business world works, you know, and you got to see things like how people put advertising together, what they do for promotions, and what we do with the county. I mean, it was a great deal. But so I worked for them for a number of years. And then in the mid 80s, you know, you have a situation with a privately held company. By the time you get to the third generation, the kids aren't too interested in the business anymore. So it gets sold. You know? So at that point in time, I went to work for the Pillsbury Company. Pillsbury Green Giant. In those days, half the Pillsbury business was processing, which was like the Doughboy and the bread products and Green Giant vegetables.
Yeah.
So we were part of the Green Giant world. And the other half of the Pillsbury business was restaurants. They owned in those days Burger King and Steak and Ale, Godfather's Pizza. And so I spent a few years with Pillsbury, and I got to associate with these guys. Not only did I learn the Green Giant way in the vegetable business, but, you know, you go to corporate meetings and you get to hear them talking about restaurants and different things. I mean, it was a great learning experience to do that. And then, you know, eventually, though, they got bigger and they started selling off parts of the company. And it was acquired again by a privately held company.
Wow.
And we were back to this kind of the same way, a smaller company, but we still were in the vegetable business, you know, peas, corn, green beans, pumpkins, asparagus. I worked for this other privately held company for, like 10 years or so, and then third generation type thing again. And at that point in time, I went to work for Chiquita Brands.
Chiquita.
The banana.
Yeah.
Banana people. So they were in the banana business big, but they wanted to get into the fruit and vegetable business. So they bought some canning and processing companies and wanted to kind of blend that in with the banana business. And that was a great experience for me because I got to learn about bananas, spent some time in Costa Rica.
Yeah.
Banana processing plantations down there. But I was with them, I don't know, for 6 or 7 years or so. Anyway, I left them and went into the distilling business.
Like alcohol. What?
Around central Illinois, we raise a lot of corn and soybeans.
Yeah.
And a lot of that corn, if it isn't exported, you know, down the river and out the Gulf, it gets turned into ethanol or alcohol products. Mm. And so I worked at a distillery and we turned corn into ethanol, which is what goes into gasoline. Mm. That was about 80% of our business. The other part of our business was pharmaceutical and industrial and beverage alcohol. We made vodka and gin and so forth.
Wow.
And, you know, that was a good caper. And I did that for 10 years doing that. And I had a fantastic career. And all the time, I was always dealing with farmers and grain elevators and agriculture. And that's why I guess I love living in the country and love farming. I retired and I couldn't get away from that. Couldn't bring myself to totally be away from it, you know. And I had family that I'd met at church years back, and they asked me when I retired if I wanted to come and help with the harvest in the fall. You know?
Yeah.
I said, oh, man, I'd love to do that. That was like 13 years ago I started. Wow. So I love still picking corn and beans and so forth.
Yeah. You have your own farm now in your own on your property?
No, I don't have farmland. That's one of those things, you know, if you could turn back the clock when I was a lot younger, you know, probably if I'd have invested in some farm ground, that would have been a good investment. But no, I don't have any land actually, except for where the house is now, that 9/11 acres that Jeff talked about. But I do have on that property, we have pasture. Most of it's in pasture. The house is there and I've got pasture there. And, I rent that pasture ground to neighbor who raises Clydesdale horses.
I've heard the story of the Clydesdales.
Yeah.
And I can't wait. We're going to go to Chicago again in November, right?
We are, but we're not going to have a chance.
Dang it, man. I want to go see the Clydesdales.
Well, eventually you're just going
to I just want to see his reaction to the Clydesdales so I can record it.
Well, I'm used to the Clydesdales down there. That's easy. It's the getting on a horse. That's what you're talking about, but I won't get on those.
Yeah.
I think the question you really want to ask.
I want to know. Yeah, go ahead.
The question you really want to know about, and I've told him this story, but he wants to know more about the pit.
I want to know about your side of the pit. Sorry. All right. I've heard his side, but you know, there's always three sides of the story, right? Yours, his, and the truth.
So well, I want, I've heard his.
And I don't know if he knows the full story.
Do you know the full story?
Well, I know part of it, but not all of it.
So I explained what the pit was at the canning company, right? And that's part of the spot I worked at. The story that I told was being buried by the green beans. And I can't remember that day. You ended up showing up, I think, after they pulled me out, I think, or because you didn't show up when I was.
I wasn't there when you were in the beans.
Yeah. So he had just showed up when I got pulled out. So
what was your thought? First of all, how'd you find out that he got buried in the beans?
Well, you know, it's one company and one operation, you know,
when you're the son of the manager,
yeah.
It just goes real quick.
But what happened is, you know, in those days we were making three bean salad. And in three bean salad, you'd have green beans and wax beans and kidney beans and so forth. And we'd have to process all those beans and put them together to make the salad. And these beans, a lot of times we raised a lot of them nearby that would come in smaller trucks. But in a lot of cases, we would have semi-loads of green beans that we would buy from like Tennessee or up in northern Wisconsin, one thing or another. We would buy some beans. And sometimes when we unloaded those, we'd unload them onto a slab, concrete.
Okay.
So you'd have a big pile of beans.
Yeah.
And then we would use, we had a tractor with a big plow type arrangement on it. And we'd use that to push these beans into a pit. And the pit had a meter bottom in it that we could set the speed. And it was like a big draper chain, moved real slow and fed the beans into the processing plant.
Yeah.
And it was down in that pit that I think Jeff got covered up in the beans.
It was one of the times the truck came directly in and we had to open up the back of the truck. And as the whole entire dump truck aspect of it raises up, the beans get stuck in the door jamb, right? And so you're picking at it with a pitchfork or whatever. And then when you hit the right spot, it's like an avalanche, man. The thing just came down and buried me all the way up to my neck. The lucky part of it is if it would have been in today's age, that would never be a job, but B, there would be cell phones all over the place taking photos of that.
Recording it, dude.
Posting on Instagram and TikTok right from the get-go. Yeah. So I was lucky enough that nobody had phones because this was in the early 90s early 90s. So I was lucky in the fact that there's no evidence of it. Yeah.
But I also want to know about the story when you cut the lawn.
Yeah, I told him that after. That, he's talking about the story where you got, the only time that you ever really got mad at me.
Was that when you mowed the grass at the canning company?
Yes. Yeah, and I mowed it. I had one side higher on the mower than the other and it was all on level. And you had made a comment about it. And I think I was a smart ass about it right in front of your secretary and some other people. And just,
do you remember this? Do you recall this, Eric?
I just recall the incident happening. I don't remember the details of how it was. You know,
what was do you remember what the incident was?
I thought it had to do also landscape bushes too. Didn't he have an occasion there where you cut them uneven or something?
I think that was all part of it. I think when it all came said and done, the mistake of it all was I was trying to be a smart ass. I was being a smart ass in front of his employees.
What's a smart ass though?
I was
like, define just, smart ass,
just,
bro.
Like, just, I don't remember the exact terminology, but he was like, you need to go out and level everything off, the grass, the bushes, everything else. And I made some kind of comment about how it's mowed already and, you know, something about the aesthetic of it or something, I'm sure, because everything is all tapered in, right? And so I made some random comment about that. And I wish I could remember exactly what I said. And I know what it was. He said, you need to go out and fix that shit. And I said, it's not shit, Dad. It's grass, and it'll grow back. And it was right in front of him. And then he was like, that moment where you see just fire starting to pop in the eyes, and he's like, you need to come outside. So, and from that point on, he was like, don't you ever fucking say that ever fucking again. Like, and I was like, okay, said, done. And I went and fixed the lawn and never really did anything like that ever again. I was always made sure that the lawn was mowed exact the rest of the way. And
I think when he did that mowing the grass, I'm not so sure that wasn't before you had worked in the bean plant.
That was prior to me working at the factory. Yeah.
You, before you were 16.
I was honestly probably 14.
Yeah.
Ish around that point in time. So yeah, it was prior to me getting into the factory. So it was, those are those jobs that kids just don't do nowadays, right? The mow the lawn and
what is that?
Exactly. Exactly.
But he was a good worker, despite the trouble mowing the grass and so forth. He was very, very good when he came to working in the vegetable business and the canning business. His work ethic showed up. Worked hard.
I think the hardest job I ever had was sitting there on the conveyor belt with the beans, and you're sitting there having to pick out all of the stems and all of the other shit that comes through. That's the hardest job for anybody, because it becomes like this trance. Like, you just see beans just go across the conveyor belt, and you're sitting there falling asleep.
In the days before they had cameras, you know, nowadays all that's done electronically with cameras and so forth. Yeah. And there's some discolored bean or a stem or something in there. Bingo, it kicks it out automatically.
Yeah.
There was, back in the day, you know, you had a lot of those inspection type jobs, by the look. But I think you spent most of your time though cleaning stuff up and doing.
Oh yeah, I was a janitor for a while. That was okay. It was mostly just washing all the concrete stuff off after underneath the equipment stuff. But I will say that I'm glad that I did that though. I mean, I think that's kind of what's missing nowadays is the character building manual labor jobs. Like, there's so many young kids nowadays that are like, I want to be a social influencer, a creator, and they don't want to put the manual effort into it. So I'm glad that I did that when I was young to do it. Also, for the most part, during the summertime, it kept me out of trouble for the most part. You know, other than that, it was, you know, again, small town, you're doing your sports programs and your teams and stuff that kind of keeps you engaged in that. But there is one story. So I want to wrap this up in a little bit. There is one story that I do want to tell that nobody has ever heard. And I've refused to tell this story until I just decided today I would tell it, because it's concerning Scott too.
Does he know this?
Well, no, my parents don't know this.
Don't know the story. this is good.
I was a senior in high school. My brother's 3 years younger, so he was a freshman. So a lot of my friends brought my brother on, you know, as part of the friend group, because he was always
there.
He was always with me, always there. Mm. You know, he played sports with a lot of my friends across the board, whether it's summertime or high school programs, whatever. Right. So out at their house, being that we were basketball players, we had a hoop out there and nice little driveway space. So
Scott plays basketball too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Big basketball guy.
So we're out there one summer day. I don't remember. Anyways, I got one friend of mine who's out there. We're all just, you know, playing one-on-one and doing some shit out there. And my brother has a little bit more of a temper than I do. Right. It takes a lot for me to get upset and angry. Whereas my brother can snap like a firecracker. He can go off.
Agree, disagree, Dave.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Yeah, I'm like my dad in that sense, and he's like my mom, and my mom can get pretty she's got a fire underneath her too. Yeah. But anyway, so we're playing one-on-one against my brother at this point in time, and I don't remember what incited this, but I think I was kind of making fun of him, or I was like really just beating the shit out of them when it comes to the game. And we're all kind of just messing around, joking around. And Scott goes into the garage and takes a shovel and he seriously swings it at my face.
Oh, God. Oh my God.
I didn't know that.
No, I have never told this story.
Oh my God.
He literally, and Chad Hefke was my friend that was at the, and Chad's never mentioned this either, at least not to my knowledge. It was kind of one of those things where we just like, what the fuck just happened? And we just kind of like, everybody quietly just was like, we're never going to talk about this. And so, yeah, literally Scott took a shovel, like one of those long ass shovels and like full on baseball swing at my head. And he missed me by like a foot and a half. And I was like, wow.
I didn't know that.
Wow. Okay. And literally he threw it down. We all kind of looked at each other. We're like, okay, let's go inside. And I will say it was a little bit weird for a little bit, but I was kind of like, we're never going to speak about this ever again. No, so I, that's the first time I've ever told that story.
I was never
going to tell your mom about that. And I've never actually even talked to Scott about that. It was kind of like literally one of those things that you do when you're a kid. You're just like, okay, this stays
between us.
This stays here.
I have a similar story when I was playing with the stick outside and it was like a big rod. I was just twisting around. I didn't intentionally hit my brother, but my younger brother, I could give him a concussion. I whacked the hell out of him. It was not intentional that way at all, though. It was just,
well, his wasn't like, that's the thing. It's like, I know that he wasn't intending to hit me.
He was
at
just
all.
Mad.
I think there's part of it when you've got this camaraderie, like with the sports thing and you feel like, oh, we're all friends here.
Yeah.
I'm going to try and be funny and whatever. Yeah. And that happened. And you're just like, okay, that was not really supposed to happen. Yeah. So
I love the father son relationship. And look, I'm about to get mushy. For me, I did not have that. So the father son relationship was non-existent me as a child. However, I was there. I have a very good father son relationship with all my sons. It's great. But learning how that dynamic worked growing up as a man was difficult, right? And so there was a question that I like to ask, or a statement, better yet said, or a question that I would ask the son, because it was asked to me. Like, what would you, if you had anything to say to your dad, what would be that one most important thing? And then vice versa. Dad, what's the one thing you would want to say to your son? I don't know if that's too deep for you guys, but like if you had one last opportunity to say something to your dad, what would be the one thing that you would say to him?
It's funny. You stated that mom was more like raised us more. Right. And I never really saw that though. So when you said that, I was kind of took that as, no, I don't think so. I understand that you were at work a lot more and that was a big part of it, but I can say this from Scott's perspective too. I don't think either one of us ever really felt that you weren't around from that perspective. And I appreciated, and I still do appreciate, the value that you gave to both of us, the values you instilled in both of us. Like I work my ass off now because what I saw him do when I was growing up, I understood the meaning of putting in a hard day's work and still being there. You came to our games. You picked us up from practice when you needed to. So don't ever say that you weren't there, because you were. I definitely work my ass off to this day because of what I saw him do and what I saw you do. So thank you is what I would have to say.
What I was going to say was one of my things, I thought I didn't pay enough attention to the kids growing up, you know? Wow. And Jeff just said that I did. I do think if I had to do over again, that's probably something I would be more aware of. And it may be because of, in today's society, when you look at it, parenting is terrible. A lot of bad parenting goes on these days, where you see where where parents don't associate with the kids the way they should and so forth. And I look back, I think I should have done a better job. Jeff just said I did pretty good, but so that's a good thing. But
yeah,
you know, we've had a good life though. It's been.
So if you had one meaningful thing that you would want to say to your son, both, it could be applied to Scott, but Jeff's in the room. So what would that one thing be?
Oh, you're putting him on spot now.
Yes, I am. Yeah. 100%. Because he has 70 plus years of experiencing in parenting. Let me put some foundational work here. One of the things that you just said to me gave me chills because I lived that life that you just pointed out. In today's society, there's not a whole lot of men that have know how to raise their children or daughter, sons, or just be present. You have a father-son relationship here, and you're a great man, I can tell, because I agree with Jeff what he just said wholeheartedly. I strived as a young man to look for a male role model to mirror after, right? And I see Jeff's work ethic. We're texting each other at midnight because we're both up working. That work ethic that you instilled in him was simply because he watched you. And so what would be the one thing that you would want your sons to know that you've never said to them before?
I'm not sure I know, but one thing it would be continue to work hard. Don't give up. Don't slack off. That's one. The second thing is continue good relationships with the people around you. I think it's so important that you like the people and you like what you're doing. You get excited about life. Don't try and be upbeat. Look for the good stuff.
Yeah.
And I just think that's I've been so blessed and so fortunate that, like I said earlier, I love what I did for a career. I've loved the people I've been around, and I think that's worth a lot.
That's very wise advice. And I'm going to give you a compliment, Dave. I see a lot of that in this man. Uh-huh. And so there's not a lot of human beings that I know, and I know a lot of people, and we have a lot of relationships, he and I together in just our circle. And there's one thing that stands out to me that I enjoy about hanging around Jeff is that he doesn't do anything that doesn't make him happy or that doesn't add value to the people around him. And it's a very hard thing to be around. It's a very pleasant thing to be around, but it's also a very hard thing in today's society that most men, particularly men, don't have. Because to your point, they're walking around miserable. They're doing jobs that they hate. And I purposely don't hang around those kind of people, right? I want to understand what happiness is. He's a good checks and balance for me as a friend to be able to go, dude, are you all right? Like, hey, what's up? And it's the simple things, right? It's just the true pursuit of what happiness is. And if I'm miserable, I have no qualms telling him. And if he's pissed off, he has no qualms telling me. But you did a phenomenal job raising this man. But
thank you. Thank you. Been good.
He's been good, but pat yourself on the back. You were there.
Well, and I'll tell you what, his mother has been excellent. You know, it takes two to make it work, you know, and that's, you know, that's part of the relationships and the social getting together and everything. His mother's been
good. We'll end with this. When somebody once told me, your job as a parent is to screw your kids up less than your parents screwed you up. And I think I did that job as my kids. One day we'll have my, I already have my daughter in here. So she did tell me that I was pretty awesome. But yeah, we'll end it with that. Thank you, Dave, for coming in, dude. And give us a little insight about what raising Jeff was like.
Well, yeah. I appreciate it. And thank you very much for having me. Yeah. It's been a great experience. really love meeting you. I feel like I didn't want to know you more.
Oh boy.
Oh boy. Here we go.
We're done. We're out.
This has been an international podcast transmission of No Fixed Agenda presented by Bubs Naturals. Music was provided by The Poor Dirty Astronauts with lyrics written by Matt Meyer. You can rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you find your favorite podcast episodes. NFA, over and out.